Here we are. This is what Dharma Talk is about. Here we are. So this is not about one person conveying information to a group of people. I have a young piano student. She's really cute. And as I sit there next to her, you know, and I teach her to move her fingers. 1, 3, 5. Do. Mi. So. There we are. And we do this to create harmony. We do this to create harmony. And not only do we here create harmony right now, not only do she and I create harmony as she do me so, but we create the possibility of more harmony. And you could say in that situation that, like, I tell her what to do, I give her the information, and then she does it. But she has to tell her hand to do it. And more importantly, she has to do it. She has to be willing. She can get up and walk away. Also, of course, your parents have to bring her. Probably your parents didn't bring you. But they brought you. They brought you. None of us get to be here without having been brought by our parents. The conditions on which we can be here to create this harmony right now and to create the possibility of further harmony are infinite. But we're here, and this is our opportunity for each of us to completely be here, who we are with what is. That's what this being here together is about, I believe. But hopefully I will provide some information, otherwise you'll probably all leave. And that would be embarrassing. So the title for this talk is Turn Around the Light. And this is, I have to admit, I would have been happy to call the talk Turn Around the Light to Shine Within, Then Just Return, but I knew it wouldn't fit on our website where it tells the title of the talk and people can go search for it. So, Turn Around the Light to Shine Within, Then Just Return. This is a line from the Song of the Grassroot Hermitage, which is a poem written in the 8th century by a Chinese fellow named Shi Tu. And I like this poem a lot. I liked it so much, I wrote a book about it. So last year I wrote a book of commentary on the Song of the Grassroot Hermitage, which will be out next year, probably in July. And I had the great good fortune of having a fellow named Taigen Dan Leighton wrote a foreword for this book. And he's someone who, he's the original translator of the work. And he's someone who is a real inspiration to me. But in his foreword, he wrote this line, and it struck me. I thought, I should pay attention to what Taigen has to say. He said, I am tempted to comment myself on many of the numerous, wonderful, rich lines in the Song of the Grassroot Hermitage. But I'll leave that to Ben Connolly and for the reader to proceed. However, I must say that Shi Tu's Turn Around the Light to Shine Within, Then Just Return marvelously contains all of Buddhist practice and its primary rhythm in one line. So I thought, boy, I should pay attention to that line, apparently. Oh. So I'm going to say a few things that might give you the impression that I know Chinese. Not true. But I have studied a little bit of Chinese enough to work with some of these beautiful Zen poems, including this one. So there's seven characters in this line that Taigen translates as turn around, the light to shine within, then just return. And if I take the principle, the first most obvious definition of each word, I could say this, and I just go word by word. Return, shine. Return, shine. Calmly. Return. Return. Perhaps you can feel what Shichitu is trying to bring us to just this moment of return, just this opportunity to illuminate what is right now with ourselves over and over again. Central message of Zen teaching. You might also think, I'm glad I didn't have to translate that line. It's not uncommon at all. It's very common, actually, in Chinese to use two words that mean almost the exact same thing next to each other. Like right next to the bell there, there's a calligraphy of the four bodhisattva vows. And right next to each other at the end of each line is the intention and vow. It just means vow! Really make this commitment. 28 characters in the vows, 8 of them mean intention, vow. Make this commitment to the alleviation of suffering. So it's common to use like two words for an intense fire, but I haven't ever seen a line with 5 synonyms. So apparently, Shitu really wants to say, come home. Come home, return. This is the place. Now, this line could really be taken in infinite ways. And in fact, what I'm going to say today does barely resembles what I wrote in the book about it. For a couple of reasons. One, the poem is intentionally evocative rather than nominative. It doesn't say, do this and this is true. It gives you some images and it allows you to enter with your practice and your life. And it's also true that I believe that this is the Zen way of responding to a text. This is about moment-to-moment relationship with things that appear to be here. So when you read a line of poetry, it's different every time if you really open yourself to it. And so when I read his little thing in the forward, I began to think about this and wanted to give a talk. Well, some new thoughts arose about this line, so I'm not explaining what Shitu means because I don't know. He died a long time ago, but I'm willing to meet him, as he says later in the poem. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Be of a family. Relate. So, in simplest terms, this line is about just coming home again and again to the moment. A message that you might think, I got that one at the first intro class. But am I the only one who needs a lot of reminders? The mind wants to run away. We get afraid, we get worried, we get angry. We get hungry, we get desirous. I want to run away from what is. Return. This is your moment to shine the light of who you are on what is. It's always true. So there's also kind of a rhythm here between what I might call retreat and engagement. So, and this is a central rhythm throughout Buddhist teachings. You know, if you look at the Eightfold Path, three of the eight elements are about how we engage in the world, right speech, right action, right livelihood. Three of them are about how we practice meditation, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So right from, and that's the first teaching of this whole tradition on which most of them are based, have to do with this rhythm between like a retreat into meditative practice and engagement with the world. And we can see this reflected throughout the entire body of teachings. And, you know, I don't know how many people here are like, well, you know, meditation would be really good, but I've got a lot of stuff to do. I've got a lot of really important stuff to do. And that's true, you know. And the unfortunate thing is that meditation often just becomes another component of our busyness. C'est la vie. We are human. This is what we do. But even a little bit of meditation can soften our busyness. And, you know, I also, it's often true that I certainly have found myself sitting on a retreat here. You know, like I come and I'm going to spend 3 days sitting at Zen Center. And then at some point I go, but there are all those people out there suffering. How could this help? What am I doing? And so sometimes it doesn't seem obvious why just turning the light inward is, in fact, essential to bodhisattva practice, the practice of giving ourselves to the well-being of the world. I think, certainly for me, sometimes I have a hard time seeing that. And so we need reminders, we need support. And I think this line provides some support. So we have retreat and engagement. I mean, you know, I'm inspired by my teacher, Tim Burkett. And, you know, he comes here and he sits in the morning. I've sat with him in the morning here for years. And then we do retreats together. And then he goes somewhere and he does work that really helps a lot of people, working with providing services for the mentally ill. That's inspiring to me. Retreat and engagement. And in the famous ox herding pictures, the aspirant, the little young monk, goes and he devotes himself to this inward process of relating to the ox, which is symbolically complex. But eventually, what happens is he comes to town. He opens his hand. He says, here I am. I'm available. Engagement. So now I'm going to talk about a bit what, let's see, my note says, this talk's model. So I'm going to look at this line in terms of a sort of a model of understanding inside, outside. There are a lot of ways to look at inside and outside that are played with throughout the Buddhist tradition and the Song of the Grasshopper Hermitage, and even this line. But so to put it simply, this line says, turn around the light to shine within, then just return. And so I'm going to say what's unsaid here is there must be some outside looking that we're doing if we're being instructed to turn within. So we have outside, inside, and return. So for the purpose of this talk, I'm going to say outside is refers to the fact that our mind, the cognitive capacity of humankind, which apparently does a lot of things. When I sit in meditation, I think, wow, that mind is doing a lot of things. There it is. And what it does at this very root is it turns experience into external objects. It says, this is stuff. And the idea is then, we can hopefully, what we want to do, or what our consciousness wants to do, is manipulate these objects so we can get what we want. It's pretty simple. So it's kind of like, you know, monkeys have hands. They're like, oh, I can grab things and manipulate them. And we have this really awesome mind. Wow. Grab and manipulate. But in order for things to be manipulatable, we have to see them as external. So the mind does this. It says, oh, that is not me. You might say, well, duh, Ben, it isn't you. That's because you share the same mental construction that I do. So the mind does this, and that's at the root level. But then, you know, just the tendency, I don't know about you guys, but I can go through a lot of my life. It's just like a series of stories about apparently external things that I want to control. So it's like, how soon, as Shariputra says in the Vimalakirti Sutra, how soon are we going to have lunch? How soon are we going to have lunch? What am I going to get? What's for me? How soon is this issue at my work going to be resolved? Like, how soon are they going to figure out, like, how to divide up the hours in a way that works for me? Or whatever it is. So that's just conventional. Outside. Turn around the light to shine within. In this way of talking about it that I'm going to use, is, you know, this is central to the way we meditate. We become aware of the body. We become aware of the fact that we are thinking. And we become aware of the emotions that are arising in our consciousness. So the things that would generally be considered internal, so I'm using a conventional designation for inside the self. The body, the feelings, and the mind. And then return is, by being intimate with what the self is doing, we can actually look up, and instead of being completely unconsciously motivated by all that stuff we didn't even know was happening, by the fact that the story was a story, that the story was constructed by how we felt about things, and that the feeling was constructed by habitual bodily mental constructions, that we can be like, oh, there's something here. What is it? Instead of being like, I know what's here, it's a thing which I want to figure out, solve, and manipulate. Does anyone here like to be figured out, solved, and manipulated? How do you think the universe feels about that? Come on. Let's show some compassion for this thing. So, I don't really like to get into other people's business too much, but I'm going to. So I don't know if you guys noticed, recently the federal government shut down. Did you guys know about that? And there was a lot of things written and things said, I believe, that I read many things and heard many things said. And, you know, so you had a group of people, the United States Congress principally, let's put them as some of the locus. And what it appeared to me from listening to the discourse was that there were a couple of different groups of people kind of identified with each other, like we have this opinion and we're together, and we have this opinion, we're together. And they had, to varying degrees, very clear ideas about what things were, as in, like, this law called the Affordable Health Care Act is awful and terrible, or pretty good. Very differing opinions. And because of that, there were some very strong differing ideas about what outcome should happen given the process the Congress was going through. One, that law should be gotten rid of, or that law should be executed. And then you have, I guess, a lot of people saying really unpleasant things to each other. You know, I heard a lot of people saying that it was like being with a bunch of children, and that people were Nazis. No, none of the congressmen said people were Nazis. That's for Facebook. A lot of Nazis on Facebook, apparently. But there was a lot of insults. There was a lot of name-calling. There was a lot of blaming. There was a lot of fixating on something cognized. People had their own ideas about what to do. Fixating on the goals and then trying to make their goals happen. And I don't know about you guys, like, what your opinion is. I didn't think the result was very good for the general well-being of the world. That was my opinion. So this is conventional, and so I don't talk about this because I want to say Congress people are bad. The purpose of stories, the purpose of all stories, is for us to see how we are in other people. That's why you have Shakespeare, so we can go, yes, I want to be with the one I love. No, I don't want the people I love to die. Yes, it's painful for all of us. The reason we have a story like this and we can sit down in this room and go, look at how these people in Congress got really fixated on their goals and then fought, called each other names, blamed each other, and we ended up with a big mess. I know you guys would all like me to blame one group of people for this. I understand that. And I probably would like to do that too. But it doesn't really seem helpful to me. What seems helpful to me is see that I do not want to manifest that energy. When I see something happen that is harmful to people, I want to learn how not to do it. What else can I do? I can't go to Congress. Well, maybe I could. I'm not. No, thank you. I don't love you guys that much. But, you know, I could sit around and complain about people in Congress or the whole Congress or whatever all day, but that doesn't help much. What I could do is say, that way of doing things doesn't really look helpful to me. How can I notice when I do that and let it go? So I can see how, you know, here it's like, oh, I want something to happen. You know, I work with the classes here. I want the class to go this way. And I don't want them to do the classes that way. And I'm like, I know why. I can explain to you my very good reasons why. Now, I can get, you know, I'll start to get caught up. Now, I need to, you know, talk to this person and that person to try and get it so we'll have enough people who think this is right. Then I go, wait a minute. What am I doing? Turn around the light to shine within. I realize, wow, okay, I'm anxious. This is important to me. I'm anxious. And then I can turn around the light to shine within, and I can return, and I can go meet the people involved and hear what they have to say and offer my ideas and work with them to create something, hopefully, harmonious. So how does one turn around the light to shine within? Zazen! Well, this isn't the answer to everything. But and there are other ways to turn the light to shine within. Western psychology, pretty awesome. Highly recommended. I'm totally into it, but that's not my field of specialty. So I'm going to talk about the method of seeing within. So understanding and becoming intimate with your own processes. Those things that we would consider internal conventionally. Ultimately, they're not really separate from anything. So to say they're inside us. This is a conventional designation, but I think it's helpful. So by doing this, you know, say we come here to sit, and, you know, we look down. So in yogic thoughts, called pratyahara, sense withdrawal, we just kind of, okay, we're not going to look around, we're not going to go running around the house looking for things, we're just going to be still. We're going to look down. We're not going to reject the senses in zazen, but we're just not going to excite them. So this allows room for some looking within. And zazen in a lot of places is taught pretty simple, posture and breath. This is a weird thing. Okay, so when I teach zazen, I teach posture and breath. It seems like really fast zazen becomes about mind. Has anyone noticed this? Mind, it's like, wow, it's like mind is like, enough about me. Let's talk about me. Right? But I mean, really, we have this practice where the instructions just sit upright, observe the breathing, and it ends up being about mind. Amazing. That's okay. Mind likes to be interested in mind. But the reasons are manifold why zazen is posture and breath, why the basis for meditation practice in early Buddhist teaching is mindfulness of body. So you start mindfulness of body, and then you begin to establish further mindfulnesses, and then samadhi occurs. That's the basic model for early Buddhist. And you maintain mindfulness of body throughout. Because as Buddha says in one sutra, it is in this very long, very fathom-long body, 6-foot-long body, it is in this very fathom-long body
that I teach the way. It's a paraphrase, but this is where we do it. Come inside. How is your body? And so, these early teachings of mindfulness of breath, and there is actually a sutra called the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutra that says, this is actually, mindfulness of breathing is the whole thing. So, it's kind of an addendum to the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra, which has a little bit more complex teaching. He says, by the way, mindfulness of breath is enough, which is a good sign because that's all we do here. So, we come in to the body, and when you taste the breath, what about this primary rhythm that Tigan is talking about? Our practice is a practice of rhythm, the rhythm of breath. Return, shine, return, shine, calm, return, return. It's a simple rhythm. You know, it's not going to get you up dancing necessarily. And so as we taste the body, we become intimate with who we are. And we actually can see the emotions which are located in the body, you know, anxiety in the pit of the stomach, that shame that burns through the chest, or anger flaming up along the cheeks. We can actually be intimate with our own emotional experience instead of trying to alienate ourselves, which the mind does all the time, alienate ourselves from ourselves so it can try and control an object. It's hard. It's hard to just be with this body. The mind doesn't want to do it. But we can gently come back, return, just illuminate this moment of body experience. And, you know, going back to this early Buddhist teachings, after one establishes mindfulness of breathing, there's three other foundations of mindfulness: mindfulness of feeling, mindfulness of mind, and mindfulness of phenomena. And they're somewhat complex, but central to each of those actually has emotional contents. And this just naturally emerges for most people doing zazen, because we don't usually talk about all this complicated early Buddhist mindfulness teaching. We just say, sit and observe the breathing and just be with what's here. Well, if you're with what's here and there's some breaks in thoughts, one, you'll begin to notice your feelings. You'll be intimate with yourself. Turn around the light to shine within. And then, you know, sometimes, like, if you're angry, instead of just thinking, you're really annoying and I'm going to explain to you why you're wrong, you might be like, oh, I am in pain. And I have someone to take care of. Which one's more beneficial? Which one promotes harmony? Very simple. And generally, in this tradition, this is not like a real, this isn't about like cognitive naming process, right? But there are many excellent processes of really naming and understanding the way the internal components of the self work that I think are very helpful. But I'm not going to talk about them very much, but it's true. So then, return. So we have outside United States Congress, inside your own beating heart, return. So if we take some time to do this and practice meditation, do retreats, we can return to the world and meet it where we have some awareness of who we are, so that's included in the experience instead of being hidden. And so it's like, here I am, you know, in my place of employment, and I know that I'm anxious. And I see that my mind wants to, you know, like, try and get someone else to do things the way I want them to. And I know, oh, that's because I'm suffering. And I know that I can see that like cuts me off from them. And then I can actually meet this person and hear what they're saying and realize, oh, wow, you probably have the same thing going on. So we're here together, intimately connected. Intimacy with everything realized by seeing through the self, by taking care of the self. As Dogen Zenji says, quite famously, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. So, outside, inside, and return. Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. So now, I'm going to engage in an adventure with you. Hopefully you will join me. I'm going to see if I can encourage us all to do some chanting together. Now, I'd love to know all the reactions that happened to that sentence. chanting is about harmony, although it's generally a pretty simple kind of harmony here. But harmony in the sense of all doing something together. And chanting is not something we do a whole lot here at Minnesota Zen Meditation Center. But we do. Sometimes we have a little chant that we do at the end of each Sunday Dharma talk, and we chant on Monday through Thursday morning and Saturday morning. I think chanting is beautiful. I like music. You may find that the way we chant is rather simple music, but since I'm a rock musician, I kind of like simple, dumb music. So, this is just even simpler. And people all over the world throughout human history have made simple, repetitive, pitched sounds with their voices. You can go anywhere in the world and people do this. You can go at 11 o'clock tonight to a bunch of nightclubs and see people doing it really loud. And you can probably, at this very moment, thousands and thousands of children are singing in schools all over the world. There are people working and singing all over the world. There are people engaged in religious practices that involve pitched and rhythmic singing. It's something that is very deep in the human experience. I value it. I do a lot of chanting on my own. Generally speaking, in this tradition, we don't do rhythmic, we don't do repetitive chanting, although the chant that we're going to do today is quite repetitive. What we'll do is we'll take like a poem or a sutra, like a essay, basically, and we chant that together, if we're chanting here. But repetitive chanting is cool, and that's what we're going to do today. So now, this chanting, the idea is that we're going to do outside, inside, and return. So here's the method that we're going to use. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to do what I call outside. This is your most conventional way of dealing with, oh my gosh, I have to chant. Which for some people is just like, it just happened. And for some people it's like, oh my goodness, how's this going to work? So outside has to do with the conventional way we function. So there's going to be two different groups. So for the outside part, you're just going to use your intuition to do your best to fit the pitch and rhythm of the group that you're in. Your group. you're combining listening with trying to make your body do it, and you're going to want to ignore the other group for reasons which may become apparent in a little bit. So here it's like my group, just tune in, find the pitch, find the rhythm. We're going to try and maintain a steady rhythm. We don't have a drummer, so we have to do that together. While we're doing this chant, which will last several minutes, if you get confused or lost, just come back to this original outside component. Sometimes we just got to do this. I got to get back into my conventional way of thinking about things and figure out how to deal with this. So come back to just listening to your group, trying to tune out the other group as much as possible and harmonize with your group. Okay, so that's outside. We'll do that first. I'll cue these as we go along. Next, we will turn the light to shine within. So here, what I'd like everyone to do, when I say turn the light to shine within, you close your eyes, and you continue to chant, but you turn all your attention into your body, into the sound that your voice is producing, into whatever you're feeling or thinking. That's going to be the interesting part, because you're going to be, you know, people are going to go, man, I'm so good at this chanting. Yeah. And then there's someone else who's like, oh my God. I hope no one notices that I'm only moving my mouth and not making any sounds. And then there's someone else who's going like, oh my God, it's a cult. You know, so, cool. So, there's something to be intimate with. That's who you are. Or, that's what's here. So, when we turn with them, close the eyes, and just turn the attention into the body, the mind, the breath, the thoughts. Now, if when you do that, you cannot stay within, then just come back. This is a conventional outside way of doing things. Okay, I'm just going to try and match up with my group. So outside, turn within. Return. So then I'll say, return. And then what I'd like everyone to do is just open your awareness to the totality of what's happening. So you don't have to turn away from what's this inside, but just open up really to the full sound. And there'll be like another part that's kind of different. And see if you can just let that be there and be really with it. You don't have to, and at this point maybe you've settled down so you don't have to make a lot of effort to control your chanting. And just open up to everything. Open up to everything. That's return. That's the return Chitu is asking us. Return. Shine. Return. Open up to everything right now. Don't wait. Don't wait. Oh, I'm going to open up to everything when I do a long retreat in 10 years. Don't wait. So then, and you can open your eyes when we return. Open your eyes. So, that's the plan. Do you think that I could take the bell? I'm going to use the bell to cue the ending. I'll do what's called a roll down. So, actually, I won't do a roll down. Change my mind. Composing on the fly. So just ring this bell, and when I ring the bell, just finish whichever version of the chant you're on, and then stop. What is the chant? Good question. You're on the right track. You got part of it. So there's another line in the Song of the Grass of Hermitage towards the beginning where he says, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. This is a line that I could have wrote a book about that line, my friends. I love Chitu. So anyway, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. So there's going to be two groups. Let's see. You guys are going to be one group, and you guys are going to be another. And I think what will have to happen here is you guys are going to chant this. Let's see. Inside, outside, and in between, inside, outside. We don't need to start yet, but you got the idea, right? We're just going to do that over and over again. That was too fast, so I got to take a slower tempo. Back to conducting school. So, inside, outside, and in between. Over and over again. Inside, outside, and in between. You guys are going to chant, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Not stuck to inside, outside, and in between. Let's do that. So I'm just going to do that a couple times so you can get it in your ear. So we're talking not stuck to inside, outside, and in between. Not stuck to inside, outside, and in between. Now, if you're Now you're like, well, this chanting feels weird. Just listen for a minute. So this is the outside component. You can just listen, get into it. We don't need to chant loud. You never need to chant loud. You chant with your heart, and you chant with your ears. Chant with your heart, chant with your ears. Okay. So I'll give you the cues about moving from outside, inside, return. Okay, so I think I'll get you guys going first. That seemed like a good idea. So I'm just going to start chanting and start chanting with me. Let's try two things I'll say before we go. We do want to try and hold the tempo. Just be at ease with the tempo. And the other is, when you chant for a long time, sometimes people will just start to be like, nah, it sucks you inside. So try and maintain the pitch. Use your body to support the sound. Use your body to support the harmony. Okay. So you can have your eyes open at first. You might take a meditation practice. That doesn't seem like a posture. Seems like a good idea. There we go. Inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and in between.
Inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and in between.
Not stuck to inside, outside, and in between. Not stuck to inside, outside, and in between. Not stuck to inside, outside, and in between. Not stuck to inside, outside, and
inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and in
But turn the light to shine within.
Inside, outside, and in between. 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 Inside, outside, and inside, outside. Inside, outside, and in between.
Just return.
Inside, outside, and in between. Outside, outside, and inside, between. Inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and in between. Inside, outside, and
oh, we always have the opportunity to turn around the light to shine within. We always have the opportunity to just return. And these are ways of being that we can deepen through practice. By deepening them, we deepen our intimacy with ourselves and with the world. It's the central message of Mahayana Buddhism, that intimacy with ourselves and the world is the most powerful way to give ourselves to the intention to promote well-being for all things. But it's good to remember to not get stuck. Teaching is just a teaching. Just a bunch of words that will someday be forgotten. This momentary opportunity, though, remains. Thank you very much for your willingness to engage in chanting music together. It was quite beautiful to hear. So that concludes my talk. I will invite comments, questions, or just about any other expression of who you are or what is.
Well, I just kind of wanted to know what you mean by in between.
That's a good question, one to which I don't have an answer. I can say that what I played with most in the book on the subject was similar to what I did here in terms of outside being conventional, externalizing mental constructed life. Inside being, turning the light within is an early Buddhist practice. And in between, I would say it looks suspiciously like the middle way, the Madhyamaka middle way. This may sound going to get a little esoteric, but hopefully I'll get there. So Madhyamaka means middle way, and Mahayana Buddhism said the middle way is to realize the way between any dualistic thinking. And they're like, this is the real thing. So Mahayana Buddhism, as some of you know, relentlessly emphasizes seeing through dualistic thinking as the door to liberation, or liberation itself. And I think she too is kind of saying you could get stuck there too.
For me, there's some simplistic terms learning. The inside is like focusing on my breath. And the outside reminds me of something a phrase I heard here likely that I like a lot is that the Buddhists keep their shoulders back so that they're open to the world. So, kind of had the world flow. And I kind of alternate between doing those two things.
Very good. Yes. Inside, outside.
Yeah.
Very nice.
You did that on purpose where one was 9 beats and the other was 12 beats and it lined up every third time.
I had the math differently. I had it as an 88 beat pattern, but I'd have to count them again. I do. I have training as a minimalist composer, so. Right, yeah. Yeah. There's a whole school of music called minimalism that's based around taking phrases of differing lengths so that they come in and out of phase. So they'll briefly be completely together and briefly be separate. So the music only shows shifting relationship. So it's a music that's about relationship. And maybe it was obvious or not, but the idea is that sometimes in a relationship you have to come in and take care of yourself. Sometimes by doing that you have the capacity to really see how those relationships are doing, changing and shifting, and not be thrown off. One of the most amazing iterations of this is Terry Riley's piece where he has two people play the exact same part over and over again, but one of them very, very gradually increases the tempo. Incredibly difficult to play because you always want to come back, either go back to where the other person is or jump way ahead. Anyway.
I have a friend who is a teacher, and he was pointing out that maybe one of the reasons that a lot of the great number theorists are from India is because there are all these rhythms of different lengths, as opposed to Western culture, where it's 3-4 or 4-4 time, and that's it, basically. But it's having to deal with all kinds of other rhythmic patterns that introduces, I don't know, something into the brain about numbers and the way they fit together.
Yeah, that makes sense to me from my understanding of the music. Music is deep in the human experience. You can make it. People always tell me they can't sing, and then I hear them surreptitiously singing. Just sing. You don't have to be good at it. This isn't about being good at things. I'm not here to try and get people to be good at things. I hope we can all just show up and be who we are as best we can. Anyone else? Well, thank you very much. I'll turn it over.